So tonight's class is packed. Tonight's class is about the details of the mitzvah of achnasas sochem. That's what we're going to try to focus on. I have some list of 20 or more practical tips and suggestions about achnasas orchim, which I collected from several different svarim, and obviously from the Chumash and from the Gemara. So very kind of like a down to basics class. We're going to start by going through the Chumash with the story of Avraham Avinu greeting the guests, the three angels that came to him. And that little portion of the Torah is so jam-packed with lessons. I mean, the truth is that the whole of Sefer Bereishit is jam-packed with lessons, but particularly that little portion, especially if you study it with Rashi, Rashi brings all the relevant medrash to that story, and it's astonishing how much there is to draw from that story. So I'm going to go through that as well. I want to connect, just before we begin, I want to connect this class back to the previous classes so that we have the flow. We talked about the fact that we started in the first class talking about that there is a divine wisdom, Hashem's himself, who Hashem, like Kabbalistically, we learn that Hashem, in a sense, inspired a part of himself into a packet of wisdom, if you will, and then that is, from there we get the Torah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that Torah means guiding knowledge, which connects directly to a mitzvah. And every mitzvah is rooted in Torah. And we also drew a parallel to the written, we drew a parallel to Chochmah, Bina, and Da'at. Without going into details, we spoke about this in the first class, I mentioned in the second class. But what's relevant right now is the following point, and that is the mitzvah of Chesed in general is an umbrella. It's like one large category of mitzvah of Chesed. And according to some opinions, what is the concept of Chesed? How does that materialize in the mitzvah form? The Torah gives an umbrella mitzvah. Follow Hashem's ways. Just like Hashem is merciful, you should be merciful. Just like Hashem clothes the naked, you should clothe the naked. Just like Hashem feeds the hungry, you should feed the hungry. Just like Hashem buries the dead, you should bury the dead. And there are various examples given from the Chumash where Hashem himself was directly involved in clothing the naked, like in the story of Adam and Chava, in burying the dead, in the story of Moshe's death, and so on. So there's an umbrella. Now that means that the mitzvah of Chesed remains in the, if you will, in the abstract. It remains in the realm of Torah. Okay? Much of Chesed remains in the realm of Torah. Who then articulates what is the mitzvah of Torah? What is that mitzvah of Chesed? How to capture it as a mitzvah? That is our sages. Our sages teach us that, for example, welcoming guests into your home, that's not a biblical mitzvah. That's a rabbinic mitzvah. It will be a expression of the general category of following Hashem's ways. Right? Or, and this is a really a broader halachic discussion of how the mitzvah materializes, where the mitzvahs exact, which mitzvah, let's say, burying the dead and consoling the mourners, nichum aveilim, and bikur cholim, visiting the sick. All these mitzvahs they're not necessarily each one a Torah obligation. They're not all mitzvah min haTorah. They're not biblical obligations, but they're the rabbinic guidance to the general principle. Like we spoke about, that's a relationship between Chachma, Bina, and Das. Chachma remains in the abstract wisdom. Bina is to understand the details of how to how to act with the wisdom, what to do with that wisdom. And then Das is the clear guidelines. So Bina is like understanding, and Das is the clear guidelines. So if you will, in this sense, the Chachma is the mitzvah of the Torah to act in a way that Hashem acts, act in Hashem's ways. The way we find Hashem expressing and interacting in the Torah. And then the Bina is the understanding, the discussions, kind of like the discussions we're going to have this evening, understanding how the mitzvah should take place. And this is being represented in the statements of our sages through the Talmud and so on. So the point that I'm trying to make is that we're Chesed remains in the abstract. It's unlike the mitzvah of, let's give an example of a mitzvah, like very specific, any prohibition or any active mitzvah. You know, don't steal. The Torah is very clear about that. How exactly not to steal, the rabbis explained to us, but the mitzvah is very specific, not to steal. Whereas Chesed remains a lot of the time in the abstract. And why does it remain in the abstract? Why should it remain in the abstract? Because that's the backdrop of the Torah. The Torah is a Torah of Chesed, like we spoke about in earlier classes. So
this mitzvah Chesed, is it developed in Gemara? You mentioned it.
Yes.
So there's development of this mitzvah in Gemara, though it's abstract.
It's abstract. There's development. There are stories in the Gemara. The Gemara qualifies some properties of the mitzvah. But it still really remains in the abstract. How to fulfill, if you're not going to find the code of Jewish law, how to fulfill the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim, of welcoming your guests to your home. There's not much about that in the Shulchan Aruch. Maybe a line here, a line there. You're not going to find much. It's not like there's a whole section. So it remains a lot in the abstract, and it's examples of the Talmud, stories of the Midrash, and more details that we find in, you know, other books that were written after that. Allows a lot of room for creativity. But we need some guidance. We need some general guidance on how to fulfill the mitzvah. Did I answer your question? Yeah? Okay.
Who could you say that in 5 books of Moses we find this is all Chochmah, basically. And Gemara then, Bina, development of everything in Gemara, that's Bina.
Right.
Development of Bina.
Right.
And then Da'at is what? Da'at
is... Da'at is going to be the precise halacha.
Da'at would be precise halacha.
Yeah. How to follow the straightforward halacha. This is what you do. That's knowing exactly the delineated action plan.
Just knowing or when it becomes part of...
Right, it should be...
Your
should
nature.
Be right, Das is born from Chachma and Bina.
Yeah.
So it should be one should connect to it. But Da'at on its own is the delineated action. You know, how to act. Bottom line. Without all the Chachma and the Bina, just how to act. That is itself is a Da'at. Yeah. But it should be connected. It's a child of Chachma and Bina. Okay. So that's an important thing to know as we go through it. So where is the code of Jewish law for how to do chesed? Avraham Avinu. Of course, we're going to look at Avraham Avinu, and we're going to learn from Avraham how to strive for excellence in following Hashem's way. Okay? So it's Hashem's way that we're studying. Hashem is chesed. Hashem is all chesed. Hashem's creation is chesed. So we're going to learn that from Avraham Avinu. So I'd like to do, in the short time that we have, I'd like to share with you, we're going to read the text, I'm going to read the text in English, pretty straightforward, and pick up on some of the Rashis, some comments of Rashi along the way. There are about 10 comments of Rashi that I just want to highlight that teach us some practical applications about welcoming guests into our home. The first thing we need to know, which is not even here, but it's we see it in Avraham Avinu a little bit, but it's not something you're going to find in Rashi, is that the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim, of welcoming guests into your home, is not really inviting friends over for a meal. That's not hachnasat orchim. That's great. You know, it's wonderful. We all have fun. It's great we invite each other over. It's a good social opportunity. You enjoy each other's company. But that's not the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim. That's an optional meal. You know, you want to have a meal together. It's like going out for dinner. It's nice. You get together. It's a social event. It's not the mitzvah. It's not the commandment to do hachnasat orchim. The commandment to do hachnasat orchim is when someone comes to town and they come and they have no housing. They don't have necessarily. They can go and buy some food in the store. You know, they could go out for a meal to a restaurant. Now they can. And they can enjoy themselves out, but they're looking for a place to call home while they're away from home. That is the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim. So it's important to know. It's a great thing to get together with friends, but that's not the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim. So it is hinted to over here. Avraham Avinu is not inviting his neighbor, Mamre, or whomever, his friend, over for coffee. What he's doing is, he's waiting outside the tent for some guy on the highway to drive by, so to say, and that's the person that he's looking for. That's an important fundamental principle about hachnasat orchim. Another fundamental, and then we're going to start the story, is that what is my mission? If I were to write like a mission statement about my home as a home of welcoming guests, what is my mission? My mission is to tend and provide for all of the needs of my guests, so that they are perfectly comfortable. That's my, as a host, as a me'areach, someone who's hosting others that are coming from out of town, that's my goal. That might be any need that they might have, right? They have, obviously they need to relax, they need to refresh themselves, they need to eat, they need to sleep. Those are all included. But there are other things that we want to bring to light as well. You know, sometimes someone's a little down, they're lonely. You know, they've been traveling for 2 weeks away from home. They just want to, you know, sit down and talk about with someone who's going to listen. You know, that's also a need that they have. Whatever will make them comfortable. Maybe they need to use the phone. Maybe whatever they need. What, you know, we want to offer them. We're going to go through it a little bit, but we're trying to offer them. We want them to walk away feeling like, I had a wonderful time. And we definitely want to remove anything that's not going to make them feel comfortable. You know, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir because our community is so renowned in its hospitality. But nevertheless, still studying the mitzvah, you know, that's what we want to, we nevertheless want to highlight these points. So that's our mission. Our mission is to make a person feel perfectly comfortable. The parsha opens. This parsha opens with Avram's tremendous desire to do the mitzvah of chesed. Avram had an overwhelming, superhuman desire to do the mitzvah of chesed. So it says that Hashem appeared to Avraham while he was sitting at the entrance of the tent. So here Avraham is 3 days after his circumcision. He's 99 years old, and he's sitting at the entrance of the tent looking for guests. He wasn't in the house waiting for the call or for someone to come and knock on his door. He was outside looking for guests. We'll develop that a little bit more. And then the pasuk says, in the heat of the day. It was midday, it was the heat of the day. Why was it so hot? Hashem made it so difficult for Avraham Avinu to welcome guests. We all know the reason it was so hot was because Avraham wanted to welcome guests, but Hashem did not want Avraham Avinu to exert himself beyond his ability. And he knew that Avraham would. So Hashem tried to make it a little difficult for Avraham Avinu. And therefore he made it too hot to sit outside. So Avraham Avinu should go inside in the shade. But no, Avram's sitting at the entrance of the tent. Doesn't sound like he's sitting under a tree. He's sitting right at the entrance of the tent looking for someone. he perseveres. So Hashem brings three guests. From here we learn an important lesson about chesed. And that is a fundamental lesson about chesed, and it goes beyond what we're just going to say right now. And that is, chesed needs to be pursued. Chesed is not something that falls on your lap. That's not called chesed. Chesed is when we extend ourselves. It doesn't have to be beyond our capacity. We're not obligated to do it beyond our capacity. Here, Avram Avinu was acting as a chassid, as someone who goes beyond the letter of the law. But we're not obligated to do that. We're obligated to exert ourselves to the letter of the law, which is to extend ourselves to others. That's chesed. An opportunity that falls in our lap is not, we can do it, that's not chesed. That's not really chesed. Chesed is when we pursue. And that's what chesed is all about. Chesed is about extending. It's about reaching out. It's like Hashem reached out and creates the world, and Hashem clothes the naked. Hashem intervenes. Hashem reaches out and tries to affect the world around, so to say. So too, we have to be pursuing chesed. And even when you pursue chesed, you'll come upon difficulties. That's the nature of chesed. Because chesed, the Talmud in Sukkah, we once looked at this Talmud together, the Talmud in Sukkah says, you might think whoever wants to jump at the opportunity to do chesed, no problem, chesed is waiting, you know. You just have to knock and, you know, the opportunity is there. It's not like that with chesed. Chesed, even if you persevere, you may not be successful. Because chesed is such a profound attribute. It's so much the fundamental of the world. It's so much what everything is about. To reach the core of the matter, you need to pursue it in order to adopt the attribute of chesed. The attribute of chesed is not adopted. You can do chesed, but you don't become a baal chesed. You don't become a master of chesed. You don't internalize the importance and the effect of the chesed unless you're pursuing the chesed. So that's what Avram Avinu is doing over here. And that's one first important lesson that we're learning from Avram Avinu. It says further that Avram Avinu lifted his eyes and he saw three men that were standing, and he looked again and he ran toward them. So Rashi points out over here that why does it say twice he lifted his eyes and he saw three men, and then he saw and he ran toward them? Why does it say he saw twice? What did he see? The first time he looked, he saw the men in the distance. And he saw them approaching, and suddenly he saw that they were stopping. So he understood that they don't want to trouble him. You know, they're at a distance, they don't want to come close. Nevertheless, Avram Avinu got up and ran. So first he saw them, then he saw them standing still, and then he saw again that they don't want to trouble him, so he ran toward them. Right? So we have these obstacles, in a sense, in order to attain true chesed. There are obstacles in the way. You try the first time, it doesn't go. There's an obstacle. You overcome the first obstacle, then you see you're not really sure it's going to work out, and you pursue it some more, and eventually it works out. That is the lesson, the first lesson we learned from Avram.
Do we know that the men from the Rashi, do we know that the men stopped because of the use of that word again?
Yeah, well, it actually says in the Pasuk that the three men were standing.
But it
says he saw. The three men were standing, and then he saw again. So what's this double seeing?
Okay.
So the first time he saw, says Rashi, he saw. The first time means he saw. The second time means he understood. First he saw these three men. Then he understood they're not going to come, so he needs to pursue them.
Mm-hmm.
So Avram Avinu, 99 years old, 3 days after the Bris Milah, he sees three, nomads in the distance. He gets up from his tent and he starts running toward them. So I saw one of the commentaries, Rashi doesn't say this, one of the commentaries says that Avram Avinu did not allow the moment to distract him from the mitzvah. You know, you're approaching people. How do you approach people? You run up to them? Is that the way you approach people? You start running at three men in the desert, you start running at them, they'll shoot you. You know, what are you doing? Get away from us. You know, when they're standing, they're probably scared. You know, if you think from their perspective. But Avram Avinu wasn't running to the men. Avram Avinu was running to the mitzvah. Now, that's a delicate point. That's a very important but delicate point. When you're hosting Hachnasas Orchim, or when you're visiting the sick, you know, you don't want the person to feel like you're a mitzvah. Oh, thank you for coming to my house. You're my mitzvah. Now I get to, you know, serve you and, you know, provide for you and all kinds of things I get to do for you. You're my mitzvah. I'm so excited I have the opportunity to do a mitzvah. Right? Totally ignoring the person. What about the person, you know? Oh, all I am is a mitzvah, you know? You know, which is wonderful, but, you know, there's also me, my personality, who I am, you know, interact with me, you know? So, that's a delicate point. So Avram Avinu was so persistent in pursuing the mitzvah of chesed, he ran up to them. He didn't treat them like a mitzvah, but in approaching the mitzvah, he didn't like waltz up to them or walk up to them in a way that would, you know, look proper. He put all his energy forward and ran toward them because, again, he was pursuing the mitzvah. So there's a certain, what would be the good word? You lose some etiquette mm-hmm. in the mitzvah. It's okay to lose some etiquette in pursuing the mitzvah, not in, God forbid, making the person feel like they're just a mitzvah. We never want to do that. That's not the mitzvah. You know, oh, you're a mitzvah. Then you're not a mitzvah. If you treat me all I am a mitzvah, then I'm not a mitzvah. I'm a mitzvah when you relate with me. When you relate to me, then I'm a mitzvah. Right? If you treat me like a mitzvah, then you're not relating to me and I'm not a mitzvah. But there's a certain lack of etiquette, which showing zeal for the mitzvah, showing a certain enthusiasm, and, you know, you're so excited that you'll run up. And one of the suggestions brought about Hachnasas Orchim is that when people enter your home, you should greet them with a smile, just like Avraham Avinu ran to the guests, greet them with a smile, and maybe you're not such a touchy-feely person, but it's okay to embrace. You know, pat the person on the back, thank you for coming, it's so good to see you. You know, to give the person the feeling that it's okay, break the rules of etiquette a little bit, okay? You don't have to kiss the person, but, you know, at least embrace what the person feels. You know, oh, it's great to see you. You know, a little pat on the back. You know, something that the person feels that, you know, when you're taking their coat, I'm so excited that you're here. You know, I've been waiting for you. To greet the person with such an enthusiasm. And it's okay to lose a little bit of etiquette in that process to get fully engaged in the mitzvah. And that's something we see from Avram Avinu over here also. Kind of a funny point, no? But an important point, I think. Because we're sometimes really stuck on etiquette. Yeah. And when we're stuck on etiquette, we lose the enthusiasm. We should have to be human, to be enthusiastic, excited, and engaged with our guests. Okay. I'm going to skip some of the Rashis. I want to highlight some of the other points. Then I'm going to get to. We'll fit them in later. But another important one is that he says to them, you know, please, I'll provide you. You know, come, you'll wash your feet, you'll rest, I'll provide you with food and so on and so forth. Ki al ken avartem al avdechem, because it is for this reason that you passed by your servant. There's such humility. You know, it's so important that when you give someone respect, if we maintain our level of personal status, if you will, in front of our guest, then we can't properly honor our guest. Our guest has to feel like, you know, I'm at your service. You know, just ring twice, I'm at your door. You know, I'm here. Whatever you want, whatever I can do for you, please. You know, because it's my honor that you're at my house. Right? Ki akena vartem alav dechem. This is why the reason it turned out that you're passing by is for my honor. So please, you know, I'm so honored that you're here, you know. Please let me do whatever I can to help you and to make you feel comfortable. Last point is that he tells Sarah, Avram Avinu comes and he tells Sarah, please take flour and take also fine flour. Kemach solet. Take flour and take fine flour. And Rashi says, why do they need flour and fine flour? So the flour was to make the cakes or the dough, the bread, whatever he was going to provide. And the fine flour was to clean the, you know, to kind of like smear the pot so that there's no moisture there, that the bread bakes well, and that, you know, it's properly baking without getting any of the moisture of the pot, and it's not pulling away from the pot. Avram Avinu, when he told Sarah what he would like to be prepared, and by the way, he prepared a lot by himself. But when he gave her and he said, please let's make this. This would be a great thing for us to make. So he was very meticulous about the details, how the details should be. Three perfect strangers. Right? When he served them, what did he serve them? He served them, each one of them, he gave them cow tongue. Each one got their own cow tongue. With what?
Mustard.
With mustard. With mustard. With mustard. And I once heard on a, it's worthwhile mentioning, I once heard on a CD that was available in our community, in one of these Torah CDs, and I put it in my car and I was listening, and the rabbi on the CD says, you know, you go to a tzaddik's home, you know, one of the greats of the generation, you know, whomever you want to choose, Sephardic, Ashkenaz, whoever, you know, do you think that when they eat, they have mustard and ketchup and pickles and olives? I mean, do they like get into the, you know, the real, you know, they know how to really eat tongue. The way you really eat tongue is have a really good mustard with it. You know, is that what you would expect? You would probably be shocked if you walked into Rav Eliyashiv's kitchen and opened the refrigerator and saw mustard and pickles and olives. I mean, he's probably not eating that kind of food, right? What was Avram Avinu doing with mustard? Like when he was serving them tongue, he served them with mustard. So this rabbi said on the CD, I think it was a nice question, he said, Avram Avinu was involved in the mitzvah of welcoming guests into his home. He had to know, how do people really enjoy good meat? How do you serve someone? You know, if you serve someone the way your standards, let's say you're on a diet, you know, so you're on a diet, you only eat whole wheat, and you only, you drink these kind of juices, and you know, you never have soda in your house, and you, like all the details that, you know, your particular diet. You know, a guest coming from out of town comes to your house, you know, they can't enjoy themselves in your house. You know, how can they enjoy themselves? It's nice that you're on a diet, but why should they be on a diet? What are you going to tell them? Sit across the table from them and tell them, why do you drink that sugary drink? You know, why do you eat that? You know, you're eating so much junk. Are you sure you want more potato chips? You know, you're not going to critique them. You want them to feel comfortable. So Avram Avinu made up his business to know what goes with this. How do I serve this with the full extent? Cow tongue with mustard. You know, that's the way he served them. So we really have to be conscious of the details of what other people would like when we serve them. These are some of the lessons we learned from Avram. Let's digress a little bit. Digress a little bit to a midrash. The midrash is in Tractate Avos, the Rabbi Nasan, and it's in chapter 7. And in this midrash, you know, we all know that Job experienced great suffering, and we also know that doing chesed and tzedakah is literally it's like a shield against any type of suffering a person can have. If you want to be protected from suffering, then you do chesed. If you chase after chesed, you can live longer, you can have more protection from any kinds of trials. So Eov, in this midrash, Eov's complaining to Hashem, and he's saying, Hashem, did I not clothe the naked? Did I not, provide for the hungry? I did all this, so why am I suffering so much? And he thought that the type of actions that he had in this world were unprecedented. You know, they were such actions of chesed that surely they should protect him. So Hashem tells him back, Eov, adayin lo higata lechatzi shiur shel Avraham. You did not even reach half the level of Avraham. What do? You sit at home and wait for the guest. If someone comes in, they like to eat, that just gives an example. Let's say they like wheat, you give them wheat. They like meat, you give them meat. They like, whatever they like. They like wine, you give them wine. So whatever they like, you have for them, and you wait at home. Says the Midrash, not Avram Avinu. Avraham lo asakein. Avram didn't do so. Ela yoshev umechazer ba'olam. Avram Avinu sat outside, and he went to seek out guests from the world. Now that's an unusual word in the Medrash. From the world. Avram wasn't just waiting for guests to come by, he was outside. If Avram could host all the people in the world, he would do it. Avram Avinu was waiting to host the world. Avram wanted, he was so eager to do the mitzvah of Achlasas Orchim, he was looking and seeking people from beyond. Not just people next door, from people from beyond. And anyone who he found, he brought into his home, and he always gave them even better than what they had. It says in the Midrash, Avram Avinu built a hotel for guests. Avram Avinu built a special wing, if you will, of his estate, was for guests. That was like the guest house, right? This was the guest apartments. And there was one important detail that's slipping my mind right now about this that I want to add. It says in another Medrash as well that Avram would always offer, he would start the conversation like this, what would you like? Do you want grapes? Do you want pomegranates? Do you want dates? Do you want figs? He would start giving like a menu, a full menu to the guest. The guest doesn't know what's available. The person tells, would you like some grapes? Okay, I'll have some grapes. Thank you. Okay, so that doesn't give the person options. He would give them the full menu. Listen, open the fridge, Okay, this is what I got, I can give you grapes, I can give you this, I can give you that. He give the whole menu in front of the person so that the he would be able to satisfy them to the utmost ability that he had. So that's another thing to keep in mind. When we have, guests that stay in our home, for a few days or even overnight, we provide them the options that for us are like multiple options and endless. We give them anything. I have a whole assortment of drinks over here and a bunch of different liquors and wines and here if you want any kind of pastas, I have this and I have this and I have meat and that. Whatever you can provide a whole menu for the person, that would be like pursuing Avram Avinu, and that's the full extent of the chesed. Okay, now I want to share with you any comments on what we've said. I want to share with you some straight points on practical points that I've seen, brought down in different Svarim on how to properly engage the guest and how to properly host the guest. So we already mentioned that the main Hachnasas Orchim is for the guests that are coming from out of town. They're really in a state that they're away from home, and they're looking for a home away from home. And the goal is to make the person perfectly comfortable. The first thing one should do when a guest enters your home, besides greeting them with the excitement, embracing if possible, taking their coat, hang them up, let them relax. First thing is to let them relax. Allow them to relax. But even before all this, you never know. Maybe the person is embarrassed to ask, where is the washroom? Maybe the person's been on the road. You know, we all know how it is. You've been sitting in the car for 3 hours, finally arrived in town. You need to use the washroom. The last thing you want to do is start getting engaged in a conversation and everything. It's a nice, polite way to do that. I've seen this brought in the Sefer. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's student, Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt from Memphis, says the following. He says, give them a quick tour of the house. Say to them, okay, this is the living room, dining room, over here we have this room, this is the kitchen, you want to help yourself to some drinks, I'll show you later where it is, here's the washroom, da-da-da, you know, go through it, you know, make yourself comfortable. The first thing you want to allow the person to make them comfortable is to show them around the house so that they know where the washroom is. You don't want to say, the washroom is over there, you know. You know, give them the tour, make them feel comfortable, and show them where the washroom is. A person's going to need time to refresh, have a place for them to relax, have, you know, they can go, they can, there's a sofa, they can stretch out and relax, there's a bed that they can relax, provide them with a towel, provide them with some, you know, anything they need to refresh in the bathroom, just give them a place to stretch out. They just came out from a trip, they're not necessarily going to want to be fully engaged in conversation, maybe they do, but give them the opportunity to be on their own and relax. What to discuss with them. It's not a good time when we have guests over to bring up questions that would make a person feel tense. You know, if you know, for whatever reason, you know the person's, for example, having a difficult time at home or having a difficult financial time, you're not going to want to bring up any kinds of discussions that will possibly make the person feel uncomfortable. The association that they'll have with the experience will be, it was tense. I when that question came, I couldn't, I didn't know how to answer. So you don't want to address any of those issues. Sometimes, also, when we have guests over, we start unloading some personal issues. You know, I'm having a difficult time with this. You know, I was hoping someone would, you know, that we could have this conversation. I was waiting to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And then you spill the beans, you unload about any family trouble or any, you know, problems at work. The person feels like suddenly they have to become like a therapist and deal with all the issues that the host has. And they feel restrained, because they're in house arrest. Here they are, they're staying in your house, and now they have to deal with all the issues. So we never want to bring those up. And if you know that if someone didn't have success in a particular area, let's say, for whatever reason, a person was not successful in their business, their children didn't come out the way they wanted them to come out, their community is suffering, whatever the issues are, don't then lead the conversation to highlight those issues that you are doing well in. Let's say you're doing well in the school that you're at, the job that you're at, your business is thriving, your kids are doing great. You never want to emphasize the things that make them uncomfortable. The Gemara in Brachos says that there's a halacha that when you eat a meal on your own, during the week, you shouldn't take large portions for yourself. When you're cutting bread, don't cut a large piece of bread that's more than a kazayit, more than, let's say, a standard slice of bread. That's considered being, you know, like a glutton. You know that you're in you're becoming totally absorbed in your food. So take smaller portions. On Shabbos, there's a mitzvah to eat large portions. For the beauty of the mitzvah of Shabbos, when you're cutting the challah, you don't just cut a thin slice. In order to show that you're so excited for the mitzvah of eating on Shabbos, the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos, we cut large slices. However, when you have a guest in your home, you always cut them large, give them large portions. Pretty obvious. But let's not, like we said before, we don't want to be on a diet. Just because we're on a diet, they don't have to be on a diet. We try to provide them maximum, you know? So you give them a piece of challah or a piece of bread, cut a nice piece of bread. They might not eat the whole thing, but you're honoring them by cutting them a nice large piece of bread or giving them a nice large portion, whether they'll eat it or not. That's the mitzvah of showing them honor. Not to feel like, well, if I give them this much, they'll feel like I think they eat a lot, you know, and I'll stick to etiquette. You know, I don't want to pile it on. People usually have a small portion. You want to give them a lot so that they feel comfortable eating as much as they want. And the halacha is that that's why the guest gives you a blessing when they leave in the Birkat HaMazon, is because you provided them with such abundance, so you should be blessed with abundance. So it's an obligation on the host to provide large portions. I'm going to run through a few more things.
I was wondering, is that true even if the guest is on a diet? I mean, let's say the person is, you know for a fact, you want to accommodate them.
You want to accommodate them. Let's say someone is a diabetic. You have sugar-free desserts. Yeah, you know, that's great. That's great. But if you don't know, you know,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, otherwise,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You want to accommodate the person. Right. Absolutely.
Lots of lettuce.
Lots of lettuce. Another fascinating thing is that, you know, Avram Avinu thinks that these three men that are walking in the desert, he thinks, Rashi says he thinks they're Arabs, right? He's telling them, why don't you wash your feet before you come into my house? We'll talk about that as well. Why don't you wash your feet before you come into my house? And nevertheless, even though they're Arabs, they're not someone that he feels, you know, are of his faith. He doesn't know them. There's very few people like that around. They're not of his faith. Nevertheless, Avram Avinu does not serve them the bread that Sarah baked. Because when she became a Nida, so the bread became tame. It was not edible for someone who would keep the laws of purity. So he doesn't serve it to them. And Avram Avinu is standing over them. That doesn't apply today. If a woman is in the... No, it doesn't apply today. We eat food which is prepared by someone who is tamei. We're all tamei. But in that time, Avram kept a high level of purity. And if the bread was... Because Sarah became a nida on that day, and the food became tamei, it became impure. So even though... Who are these people? They don't keep any of these laws. But Avram Avinu was meticulous about giving them the food which was up to the highest standard of, if we will, kashrus. The highest standards of kashrus. When he provided them the meat and the milk, he brought them tongue, and he also brought them butter. How did Avram do the same way? So he provided them all these different meat and milk dishes. Well, he was standing over them to make sure... That's what the Pasuk says, that he stood over them and served them, and one of the reasons was to ensure that there wasn't a mixing of meat and milk. That's what we're taught. That was one of the reasons. So, even though they did not have that standard, Avram Avinu, as part of caring for your guest, is providing them the highest quality, if you will, kashrut, that the high quality that you keep, you provide for your guests. Even if they may not keep that level, in your home, this is the level that you provide. And that's part of catering to the greater needs of your guests. So a guest might say, you know, but I don't keep kosher. That's okay, I don't mind, you know. But, in, you know, in my house, the quality of care is such that the highest quality of care is providing of the utmost kashrut. So that's what Avram did as well.
But they were eating meat and milk at that time. Or?
So first they ate the milk product, and then they ate the meat product. Yeah.
Did, at that time, did they have separations?
Well, Avram Avinu kept that level. Kept that. Yeah, so Avram Avinu kept that, right, the water or whatever they had in between. Mm-hmm. Avram Avinu kept that level for himself, not necessarily for anyone else, and it wasn't a mitzvah for anyone else. Mm-hmm. But that's a level that he kept in his own home.
I thought it seems almost incongruous because of my level that I don't understand. If they appeared as Arabs, and he said that you'll wash your feet, and maybe he thought they were Arabs, and if he thought they were Arabs and he didn't want them to have the dust or the sand on their feet because of Avodah Zarah and, you know, all that stuff, and yet despite the fact that he did that just so that it wouldn't appear that there'd be, you know, Avodah Zarah in his tent, and yet he still honors them like the highest tzaddik. It seems so incongruous to me. Mm-hmm. Because how could he, at the same time, I know he's not an angel, but how could he at the same time treat these
malachim
like idolaters, right, and like angels at the same time?
Right.
Well, it seems like you kind of figured out that they were angels.
Right, I'm not sure when, though.
I don't know the English way. Said perceive, right? But I don't know if it's the Hebrew is equivalent, right? Mm-hmm. But kind of, it seems like, you know, the word in English kind of show that, you know, somehow he perceived that they were different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not so sure that.
No, that's true. That's true. But in that case, it's odd that he would offer them something to eat. You know, and that would be odd that if he perceived early on that they were angels, then it would be strange. It clearly seems, though, that once they inform him, by the way, you know, you're going to have a child next year, then he realizes, okay, these aren't ordinary guests. You know, they're telling me something, unusual.
Yeah. So I don't know at what point, but
yeah,
his work was pretty much early on. So
okay, that's a good point. So maybe that's why he's treating them, you know, with such high regard. The other aspect,
but they ate for,
right, they
for him.
Made it as though they were eating. They weren't actually eating. Right. Angels are not capable of that. They appeared physical. They weren't really physical, and so on. Mm-hmm. But you know, Avram was keeping his eye on the ball, meaning his will was to serve Hashem in this process. So not bringing the dust of Avodah Zarah into your tent, that's part of it, of serving Hashem. The other part is the interaction that he has with his guests. That is Avodah Hashem itself. So it doesn't matter if the person is an Arab who's a nomad in the middle of the desert. That doesn't matter. When he comes to my home, he is a guest of mine, and I'm treating him with the utmost respect. Yeah, with the utmost honor. There's another point over here, and that is that when we invite guests into our home, so we try, here's another point of etiquette, we try not to hurt them or harm them in any way, asking things that are not comfortable and so on. But the puck stops here, so to say. That's what they say, yeah. You stop here. That when they're bringing in something that could be detrimental to your home, they're bringing an influence into your home which would lower the standard of your home. Perhaps it's conversation. Perhaps it's, you know, we don't have this so much, but, you know, a behavior that's improper, or they're bringing in some literature into your home which you feel is inappropriate. Whatever the standard is that you have for your home, it is your responsibility to advocate for yourself and say, it would be my greatest honor, you know, for you to be in my home. Leave the dust outside, so to say, you know. Leave the dust of your Avodah Zarah outside. many times people, they go beyond the letter. They think they're doing tremendous chesed, inviting people to their home, which would lower the bar, let's say the ethical bar of their home. People that will have conversation, or they'll, let's say if you're a Shabbat observant, and they'll desecrate Shabbat, and perhaps your children would see that, and that makes an impression on us and on our children and on our family. And that needs to be weighed. Well, can absolutely engage and embrace every single person into our home. Absolutely. However, we have to be mindful of the possible hazards. If we can weather those hazards by asking people to consider, you know, leaving those things out of our environment, great. If we cannot, then our environment takes precedence. We have to protect our own environment first. But absolutely always be engaging, but be mindful of that. That's something else that we learned from Avraham Avinu. It's unbelievable how many lessons on the mitzvah of Achdas and Orchim we can learn from Avraham Avinu. We'll end with one last point. There are things that Avraham Avinu did himself, and there are things that he handed off to others. He asked Sarah to prepare the bread. He had the main dishes Avraham Avinu prepared himself. He did the shechita, he did the slaughtering of the bulls for the tongue. He did the main involvement himself. The side involvement he left for other people. And that teaches us, the Chafetz Chaim learns from this an important lesson, that when we have people in our home, even if you have, just like Shabbos, like with the mitzvah by Shabbos, when we prepare for Shabbos, so we don't say, you know what, it's okay, I have, let's say, if you have the luxury of having other people take care of Shabbos for you, if you have people that are working in your home, they're preparing, they're doing the cooking, they're doing the cleaning, you don't really have to do much, you just arrive at home, you know, maybe you have a situation, yeah, halavai, right? Halavai. Okay. But sometimes, you know, you have a situation where you could, let's say, go to a hotel for Shabbos, you go to a Shabbaton, and you think, okay, I'll just come in, I'll just shower and get dressed, go downstairs, and ta-da, Shabbos, right? I just paid for it, right? No, nevertheless, a person, every single Shabbos, needs to be involved to honor Shabbos. So too, with being involved with our guests, we shouldn't say, it's okay, someone else will do it. Even though we learned that if you're involved in the study of Torah, you should not, if someone else can do the mitzvah, you should continue the mitzvah that you're involved in. But nevertheless, to show some honor to your guests, you yourself should be involved. And Avraham Avinu left speaking to Hashem to show honor, be involved in the main things with his guests. So that's another important lesson that we learn, which is to be involved ourselves, not to leave it, let's say, to our spouse or to someone else. Let's say the cleaning lady is showing up on Thursday, let's say. It's okay, she'll make the beds. I'm just an example. You know, she'll make the beds, or, you know, I'll have her buy, or whatever the things are. No, I want to have a personal touch in this mitzvah myself, in the main parts of the personal mitzvah. So these are some of the things that came out of the story of Avraham Avinu, some practical application to Hakdasat Orchim. If you have suggestions for the next mitzvah, I'd be happy to hear them anytime. We're going to continue with interpersonal mitzvos of Chesed. I'm going to speak about visiting the sick. I'm going to speak about comforting a mourner. I'm going to speak about, unfortunately, burial, and so, like, not actually burial, but involved with chesed shel emes as well. And then we're going to continue on the path of interpersonal mitzvot.